Well, good evening, everybody. People are still streaming in, so I'm gonna maybe just kind of go slowly. It could be for 1 minute here. My name's Jerry Harder. I'm gonna be the retreat manager this evening and for the weekend, and I'll just give a little introduction here, but hopefully not too long, so we can get right to what we showed up here for. So I'm really happy to be here. I mean, again, I'm with this an event sponsored by Seattle Insight Meditation Society, and we are really happy that Philip Moffitt has offered to teach here again. It's always a pleasure. I remember learning from him many years ago, and I've always appreciated his teachings. And tonight we have this topic, natural arising clarity, a path with practice. Okay, tonight and then Saturday and Sunday all day. So we'll have a 2-hour sit this evening, and Philip will be introducing this area and talking about it, giving a Dharma talk, leading a guided meditation. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we'll have a day long, 2 days of practice from 9 o'clock until 4:30. I'm intrigued by this topic, natural arising clarity, a path with practice. This is new learning for me, and I've been practicing for quite a while. So I'm looking forward to this. And I guess as I think about this, and as I think about a weekend retreat, a home retreat, I always like to approach it like I would any, like a residential retreat, and try to set up my conditions so I'm not going to be distracted by my to-do list. And have basically one thing on that to-do list, and that is to practice. And so we have this, this real gift of the teachings coming from Philip. And it's a practice. So this is not just an academic learning session. It's something like we're going to be learning. There's a natural arising clarity arising from this practice. So I'm looking forward to learning about that. This evening, there will be different parts and a little bit of an introduction right now and with Philip, and he'll be leading us in a guided meditation. There will be a Dharma talk, and then there will be time at the end for some Q&A where you can ask and get some questions answered. So I guess in that regard, talk about if you have questions, there will be an opportunity to ask. So we have certain guidelines just around technically how we relate to a Zoom meeting. And so if you have questions, if there are technical questions, we have tech support. Just address it only to the tech support person, any type of technical, anything that might be technical. If there's a particular question that otherwise, I'm available to answer some questions, but refrain from broadcasting any type of chat. And also, especially refrain from chatting directly with Philip. I mean, he's working on guiding everybody through this today. And so just limit your chats to either me or the technical support as it might be appropriate. And again, you'll have some Q&A time later on. So I think with that, I'm gonna turn it over. Just one more question. Boy, I'd like to see everybody on this. We could see a full view of everybody. Okay. I'm wondering, and so was Philip wondering, are there anybody who's new to meditation? It'll kind of allow us. Yeah, I see one hand up, maybe a couple of hands that are people are new. So keep that in mind as this evening develops and unfolds, and hopefully address the full range of people's interests and needs this evening. And if you have issues, you can send a quest a chat to either me or the tech support. So with that, I'm turn it over to Susa Pal, who will introduce Philip tonight, and welcome. I hope you have a wonderful retreat. There's still time to sign up for the weekend if you're interested. Just note that. And have a good retreat this evening and this weekend. I wish you well with your practice. Suze?
Thank you, Jerry, and a warm welcome from me. My name is Susa Pell. I'm one of the assistant teachers at Seattle Insight and one of the folks who facilitates the Sunday morning sit in on Dharma Talks. I'm so pleased to welcome Philip Moffitt back to Seattle Insight. He's been coming for many years, generally the first weekend in December. And we've all been benefiting. I've recognized a bunch of familiar faces as I look at the Zoom, and then a whole bunch of new people to me anyway. So Philip's been a meditation teacher for over 25 years. For many years, he was one of the guiding teachers at Spirit Rock, and he's the author of three books: Dancing with Life, Emotional Chaos to Clarity, and Awakening Through the Nine Bodies. So many of us have benefited from his clear and grounded teachings about practicing Dharma in daily life. And for this weekend, as Jerry mentioned, the topic is Naturally Arising Clarity, a Path to Practice. For everybody's information, we've included a resource page that you can find on in the chat. Plus, our wonderful registration team will be sending out the resource page to everyone who participates in the weekend. You can also find more information about Philip's books, his articles, and talks on his website, dharmawisdom.org. So, a very warm welcome to Philip and everyone here. And I join Jerry in wishing everyone a very quiet, settled and inspirational weekend. Enjoy. Off to you, Philip.
Thank you, Suze, and greetings to everyone here. I miss being in Seattle in person for many years. I was there in person, and one of the things that I most miss is during the walking time periods, there was a little upstairs area, and I would fit everybody into one of those small groups for just so I did nothing but stay with you the whole time, and I really enjoyed those small groups with you. So just know that if were I younger and so forth, I would still be doing that. Okay, so tonight we are going into a different kind of orientation towards practice of the same old Dhamma. No, nothing different about the Dhamma. The Buddha got it right. He had plenty of time to get it right, and he did. And but the Toray calls that what I do as this naturally arising. Sometimes I call it natural arising, sometimes naturally. It depends on how I'm using it, so stick with me both ways. And Toray calls that this all came out of my own practice experience. because of Tuareg, and you're one of your guiding teachers, but because of Tuareg and a woman named Dana De Palma, they really urged me to start to share the way I practice. And so over the last some number of years, maybe 7 years now, I don't really remember, I've been doing this more and more. And this naturally arising is the way I practice. From the get-go, I was practicing in this manner. I did not have it all worked out the way, you know, I had a long time to be. I have been meditating for over 50 years, so I've had a lot of time to practice, and it was not like one blinding light of understanding. But so the idea is of this kind of practice, the understanding of it, is to create a kind of the scaffolding. This is Tuareg's word, scaffolding, around how we practice. And in creating that kind of scaffolding, it keeps us oriented, and it really keeps us away from overachieving, for getting all anxious about practice, to think there's something I should be doing, I must be doing it wrong, everybody's doing it better than me, why am I restless, I've been doing this 10 years and I should never be restless, all of those kinds of distractions to just being present and as you'll hear, available. And so that's the simple explanation of this practice. We practice in a way such that we are orienting ourselves over and over again, and then everything just naturally arises. It just appears. And that includes the concentration all the way into samadhi at the access concentration level. That's that level where you can start to really have insights from. There's a natural clarity arises. There's natural recognition, this phenomena of recognition, the way the Buddha is using recognition in a very special way, which we will get much more into tomorrow. But the insight of that is that brings about the liberation. It is naturally arising, and certain mind states that you may have touched on that seem hard for you to get back to, it may turn out that some of these just naturally appear. So we're not looking for anything special, nothing at all, but we are tracking in with, so we're placing our attention as is being asked. And once you learn the system of this, then you would place your attention as you've learned to do. And of course, each of us is different, so we'll each have somewhat different experiences. But we're using this structure, this scaffolding of bringing our mind to a kind of availability. And in that availability, we have stayed inner in our orientation. So there is, you will again hear this tonight again, there's an inward staying to our experience. We have not yet turned outward to look at what the Buddha called the four foundations of mindfulness, the body, the pleasant and unpleasant, the mind states and the emotions with those mind states, and then the insight Dharma teachings. That those are the four foundations. That's the basics from our seeing how we relate to the world. It's his map for how we see the whole world, that we are involved in those ways with the world. And it's been a very effective map for 2,600 years. And the first part of the naturally arising practice is the a preparatory practice where we establish this inward staying, and then we turn to the four foundations. The other part of it that's somewhat different is that we deliberately notice that we have these different dimensions of consciousness, and we become aware that we may be utilizing different dimensions or capacities, if you like that word better, or aspects, if you like that word better, dimensions, capacity, aspects, and which that we without meaning to, that's just where that we're utilizing that aspect of our consciousness for our meditation at this moment. And that turns out to have many benefits when we are able to recognize that. We learn how to skillfully move to other dimensions of our consciousness. And we know what works for us and what doesn't work for us in general and in this particular moment. So we're not going to do all that tonight, obviously, but we're getting started tonight in a very straightforward way. There's something that I have not done in the past, but that I am employing tonight, and that is the use of slides. And there's only going to be a few slides, but when I usually do this retreat, it's an 8-day retreat. There's 6 full days of practice, so I'm hoping that my gamble or my experiment is to see if these slides help you kind of get settled. You're not supposed to. This is not a practice that's got a lot of intellectualization, some big theory or concept. It comes from felt experience, but nonetheless, it's new, and so we'll see if this helps. And if we could have the slide number 2, please. Thank you. So, naturally arising, it refers to the spontaneous and effortless unfolding of experiences, insights, and qualities of strong concentration when conditions are appropriately set without forcing or controlling the mind. We are getting in the orientation inside us. It's an inner orientation of mind heart that allows these things to naturally arise, which many of you have had a lot of experience. You know when you're quote dropped in, and then things start happening. Your concentration's stronger. Your insight, you're unruffled. You can handle dukkha when it's this discomfort when it arises, this unsatisfactoriness, which we call dukkha, which has many English meanings. And then the second part of the slide, this process aligns with the mind's innate capacity for clarity and presence, fostering wisdom and balance in a way that feels organic and uncontrived. So we're not trying to impose something on ourselves here. We're not imposing. We're just following our own experience. We're using attention to get to the moment in that way. And I think that's the only slide we'll do to start here. So if you will remove the slide, please. So I'll start all the meditations with ringing a bell. I'll ring it only once at the beginning, and I'll ring it 3 times when it's over. And this form of meditation, there is much more guidance than maybe you've been used to in an earlier retreats that you've been on, because I am holding your attention. I'm helping you train your attention to stay inward focused with yourself. And until you learn how to do that, it's the minds that can be like a little bit rebellious about that. But if you're following someone else, then the ego actually is much more willing to let that happen because, oh, well, where's this going? Kind of thing that ego's satisfied with. So we will see what happens with each of us tonight. Arriving in this moment. Arriving here and now. Arriving. Arriving means bringing your full attention. It means orienting in a direction. So from the beginning, you're becoming directionally aligned with the Dhamma, without any thought about it by arriving into this moment. Mindfulness is front and center. Mindfulness is all around. Arriving here just as you are, in the outer form, the conditions in the room in which you're sitting, including if other people are sitting in this room, the temperature of the room, and inner conditions. You're hungry or satisfied or too full. Your mind's tired or very bright. We're not judging any of those conditions. We're not demanding anything's any different. Our interest is being present. We're utilizing mindfulness to be present, arriving. You start to notice that you are present, that you are mindful in the moment. You are present, so you know something that's happening in this moment. Your attention is focused in this moment of space-time, naturally. No forcing it, no demanding anything of it, but whatever is happening through any of the sense gates, you are present for this moment's experience. You're not looking for more or trying to get rid of anything that's present. You are just here now. Here now. And you start to realize that when you're present, one moment of being present follows another and another. And you realize there is a flow here, or these one moments after another make a continuity. And you can maybe feel the hint of being in presence, that you have presence. There is a knowing presence, not your personality, not the one who is always wanting to do the right thing, but the natural mind, heart's capacity of presence. When we're out of the way, when ego is not in the center, the felt sense of presence. You don't have to name any characteristics of it. You know when you feel present in a way that there is presence. And when you're with a good friend or someone who can really listen to you and cares to listen, and they have that kind of presence, what a great pleasure to be with someone who has presence. And in this moment, you directionally are moving towards this presence. It may already be quite well established. There's nothing we can do to make it more. We just stay present. We evoke the mindfulness over and over, front and center, all around. And we start to feel present. We have presence. It's a felt sense. whatever degree, from zero to a large percent, we accept as just conditions. We're not having to fix anything. Staying with just this being present. This type of natural alertness that's not looking for an end, but is looking to be present. You start to realize at some point, at least a hint of, that you're available to this moment, that you're being present in the manner you're being present means that you are available to whatever arises in the moment. It may be pleasant or unpleasant. You are here, willing to receive the moment. You can feel that immediacy of the experience of just being available. Because you're not trying to do anything, you're not trying to do something right, there's none of that. You're just being available to the moment, whatever the moment wants to present through any sense gate. This available is a mind state, and it's a heart state. You are available in mind, heart, just as the Buddha was pointing to. And because you're willing to be available in this way, you are choosing to be available in this way, whether the moment that's bringing with it pleasant or unpleasant, interest or not much interest. You're being available to the moment without conditionings, putting conditions on what it's bringing. The most amazing thing happens. The moment is available to you, meaning that you have choice as to how to relate to what's arising in this moment. So simple and yet so rich. Available, available. How we relate to it, if it's something that we like and we think is beneficial, then of course we're happy to stay with it. And if it's something that's not supportive, not beneficial, when we can, we move away. That is one way of relating to the moment. It ties directly to the Buddha's wise efforts of the Eightfold Path, that you move towards, you stay with. If it's wholesome, you avoid, or you move away if it's unwholesome. So here, without ever trying to do anything, you're already having that experience. Available, available. It feels good to feel present in this way. A little good or very good. And sometimes we can't, there's some thought we keep having over and over again, where we're reliving something that happened today that was upsetting or that we don't know what to do about, or that we some conversation we had, and it's got stickiness. It stays with us without our preferring that it stay with us. It just stays with us. When that happens, that's part of it. That's not it's not a mistake, because we're just being present, and it so happens that it's something that that's difficult, and we're getting caught in it. Rather than trying to force ourselves to think about something else, to treat it as somehow I'm just going to have the dharma of it, we simply stay with it, and we change how we're relating to it. So we see it as dukkha, or we see it as sukha that we're clinging to, wanting more of. And that way of seeing it, because we are present, we can feel whether the way we're relating to it is skillful or unskillful. And therefore, we have choice. Choice. So again, the first level of choice in the way how we relate to something and practicing in this manner is if it's skillful and wholesome, we stay with. If it's unskillful, unwholesome, we move away, if we have that choice. The second way of relating, if we don't have that first way, is that we deliberately, using our mindfulness, using our own compassion for ourselves and others, we change how we're relating to it, because we were available here and now. Dropped in to this degree, you are already in the Dhamma. You're in the Dhamma. You're sitting in the Dhamma. You're seeing with Dhamma eyes, hearing with Dhamma ears. You're willing to stand under whatever's arising and let the sensate experience of it occur, because you have choice. This is clarity of mindfulness. Without any doing or trying or building a big construct, you're just practicing. Just like the Buddha, just practicing. Sometimes we're afraid to see that we have choice, because we've had some experiences in the past where we stayed present and we got overwhelmed, or we're afraid of choices because there's so many choices. Well, how do I choose? What do I choose? But we're not doing any of that. We're seeing what happens next. When we're mindful and available for the moment, we see how we relate, and we use just a basic wisdom and compassion to relate. Simple, simple, simple. And that's where we get our choice. The mind can become steady, smooth, just by being available. So satisfying. So easily satisfied. Maybe not this evening, but eventually you will discover that being available has a much more powerful effect on your mind heart than you have recognized, because you have been sort of available and not available, available, not available, so that you've sort of titrated all the many dimensions of when the mind and heart is just continually present. And therefore we recognize, to balance all the many places the mind can go, we balance it with an aligning of our attention. We've brought our attention into being present in the moment, to have presence, and now we're aligning that presence with the Dhamma. This aligning is a kind of further refining of our attention, of becoming more fully present as Dhamma practice. It's as though the sati, the mindfulness, is getting a little supercharged. It's starting to have more heart. So we align with the Buddha by aligning means what will inspire us. Yes, I am inspired by the Buddha or the Dhamma, inspired by my own Buddha nature, or the Buddha nature of all humanity, or the Dhamma that the Buddha taught, or your own ability of mind heart to feel what's true. You recognize you're capable of having discerning wisdom, and that inspires you. Or Sangha, you're in a safe community. We're holding the question. We're bringing our own vulnerability and our silence into the group, and it's safe here. Or the connection of Sangha, the four Sanghas of the nuns and the monks and the lay practitioners through all of these centuries. Or the Brahma Viharas, aligning with metta, this loving friendliness, kindness. Or with compassion. Or equanimity. Or the Eightfold Path. Or just part of the Eightfold Path, like wise view and wise intention. You're not demanding, you're turning your availability to this, and something will naturally arise. You notice it because you can feel the sense of an uplifting, of an inspiration, of a resonance, and feeling a safety, a little protected from just random thoughts. And you start to feel available, aligned. Available, aligned. Here, now. Here, now. The mind, heart are available and aligned to the Dhamma. Naturally so. You're not applying any kind of a concept. It's a felt sense. You're just using your attention capacity wisely, skillfully. This is a moment of inward staying. Your orientation is to the mind, heart, and their capacities, not to what's arising from any of the sense gates. It's inward staying, spontaneously so, naturally, available and aligned. Steady, steady. Sense experiences may come and go, but your attention, your orientation is to this inner staying experience. Maybe in this sit, or maybe in a sit later on in the retreat, you will feel the steadiness of this available aligned. The steady stillness. It's collected and unified attention without any trying, any doing. You are experiencing a taste of, a little whiff of the smell of it, or just a little resonance with, or a real full experiencing even now of this collected and unified, available, aligned. In this practice method, it's called the first ground. This kind of natural samadhi arising. Not utilizing any outward object. So steady, a stillness. Inward staying, inward staying. No outgoing yet. Steady, steady. Just a hint of a hint, a vibratory feeling of it. You're welcome to stay here. There's often no movement. So why would we move attention? Many a time in my own sits, this is where I stop. If we are going to go on, if you are going to go on, then we will start to turn our attention to the four foundations of mindfulness, starting with the body, but we do so gently, gently. We're not going off to grab knowledge to get somewhere, but rather we're being available. We're employing the skill of being available, aligned, to more fully understand dukkha and anicca and anatta. So our motivation is towards liberation, not towards accomplishing. So we are carefully aligning with a motivation. And without demand, without expectation, we turn to experience the body here and now, available to knowing the body through consciousness, physical body through physical body consciousness. You can feel your own consciousness that can register physicality. People who have had certain brain injuries can't have this dimension of consciousness. So we know that this physical body that's manifest brings with it its own consciousness capacity. And so maybe we notice our posture, as the Buddha suggests. And that's how we know this, what we call embodied awareness, that awareness is embodied within this fathom-long body. Or maybe it's in sensation. We feel various sensations. Or the posture and the sensations are all coming in together for you. But you're not grabbing anything. You're not trying to get anywhere with anything. You are available. Available and aligned. So satisfying. Or maybe for you, it's the body parts. Again, as the Buddha instructed, each of these that I'm naming, they're from the Buddha. What brings us into the moment in this way? It doesn't have to be that each of these work for you. Whatever works for you, utilizing this particular consciousness of the manifest realm. Maybe it's the elementary nature of the body, the physical body. You can feel the warmth of the body or cool where you are. That's the fire element. Or maybe you feel the connection of the body from the feet to the top of the head or the other way around. This flow, this form. And that's the water element. And just maybe you notice the earth element in the body. Maybe you're used to this, or maybe this is the first time someone suggested something like this. First or the hundredth. It's always a new experience, this knowing the body in the body through directly experiencing, being available to have a felt sense of the earth element. So you might notice weight underside in the arms or in the pelvis, You might pay attention to the lower half of the body in the pelvis and notice that there is a hardness, a firmness, a heaviness. Earth element, earth element, earth element being known. Where are the upper leg bones? That femur in each of the upper legs. Through skin, through flesh, into the bones, feeling the bones. So made up of earth element, not exclusively, but predominantly earth element. Earth element, earth element. Again, weight underside. The knees, the lower legs, those two bones in the lower leg. Through skin, through flesh, and all the parts of flesh to sit in the bones. The ankles, the feet and the toes, all to the bones. So we're sitting in the bones, as sometimes said in Zen. Steady, still, and if you will, please, invite the earth element to rest on earth. It's a natural relationship when we're not anxious or in some sort of reactive state. Like all animals, we just naturally do this. So inviting this feeling of earth element resting on earth. Here and now, here and now. You're available to the felt sense and you're relating to it with a kind of open wonder, not demanding it be other than it is, but getting the great privilege of being present for your immediate experience of the earth element. So the mind is present, the heart is present. Here and now. You might notice how steady the attention is on this steady object, how still the earth element is. Relatively still, but still. Shifts may occur in your body as you're noticing this, or in your mind, or in your heart. Available to the earth element resting on earth as a felt sense, as steadiness, as quiet, as stillness. From this steady, stillness, we can notice the presence of the wind element, just as there was presence of the earth element. This wind element represents the movement. We know it most easily through the breath. It's taught in India there are all of these different winds, all of these different pranas. But for our purposes, knowing it as breath, in the breath, the experience of the breath, in the breath, the Buddha tells us, the felt sense of it, here and now, unclouded by preferences, by views and opinions. It's just wind element moving. We're not demanding the breath be better, what we think would be better. We're not noticing from a judging point of view at all. But the phenomena of knowing the breath in the breath. The earth element and its steadiness is there in the background as this attention is played, stayed with the knowing of the breath as a wind element. Present here and now. Attention fully upon without any effort. Amazingly, this moving object we can steadily know, even though it's always changing in a way that the earth element was not. Because our attention is steady, we are knowing the ever-changing experience of the wind element. Stillness and movement. Stillness and movement. No need for an opinion about this experience of knowing moving, of movement. No need for a comment. Its isness is palpable. It's here and nowness, palpable. We know the experience of it, whether it's long or short, fast or slow, full or more shallow. We just register that without having to have a preference. So we're registering the direct experience, just like we were with that first ground when we were inward staying. Not making anything do anything, not making the mind do something, not making the heart do something, but steadily available. Our attention is steady. When we don't comment on our experience, when we don't judge it or compare it, There's quietness, even if it's a moving object experience. The mind becomes ever more steady. Steady. Just steady. Just steady. Being with this wind element, with the earth element, being the grounding for seeing, feeling, having the felt sense of the wind element of breath. If we choose to not just stay here in the meditation, completing the meditation just here, we can contemplate, ask the question, what is movement? This is inquiry meditation. What is movement? How is this happening? What is this? We learn to open to knowing in more subtle ways, more connected ways. And we realize that the movement of the wind is energy. In our time of solar power, we certainly know that as much as the captains of the ships of yore with their big, huge sails knew it. This energy, that's there in the wind and the breath. And in our reflection, we can get a hint of that this energy is life, that without movement there is no life. And we recognize, oh, the breath of life. And how we're always trying to bring back this breathing if someone's had trauma. Breathe life into the moment, we will say. Oh, the joy of a full breath. And here we're experiencing a different dimension of our consciousness. A different capacity. It's called vital consciousness, where we're conscious of our own vitality and can recognize it. Other animals feel it, but we don't know if they have a reflective knowing that they know this, that we do. And so we can be more awake, more alive, through this vital consciousness, with the breath still being the object. But with the breath as the object, we're feeling through because we are available and aligned to our own vitality, our own sense of aliveness. It's not supposed to be some way, it's not supposed to be strong are just balanced in some particular way, that a theory would have it. We are just feeling our own aliveness. We're awake to our aliveness. This consciousness is where we feel the life force in ourselves, the life force in a newborn baby. So precious, that life force. Oh my. We feel it when we're experiencing prana in yoga. We're doing pranayama, or the chi, the ki, in aikido or qigong. Available and aligned, we're available to directly know our own nature and the nature of nature. Just as the Buddha asks, suggests, to know directly for the purpose of insight. Available, available, available and aligned. Alive and awake, calm, steady, still, no agenda. Very aware of the inner experience. There's still a presence of inward staying, although we're very much now in the foundations of mindfulness. Our first taste. That's their first taste. We're not trying to figure it out. We're not interested in having an opinion about whether we like it or don't like it, whether we're good at it or not good at it, whether we're going to like it in the future or not like it in the future. We don't have to do anything like that. We just let everything be. And the mind, heart, in its natural form, will just do us. This is that phrase that the if you show up, the Dharma will do you. It's because that we have this inherent nature, call it Buddha nature, if you like. I don't have a particular name for it myself, but just deep appreciation for getting out of my own way. And with a practice, the mind becomes more subtle and can experience ever more subtle experiences, have all sorts of mind states and understandings arise from just starting this way. And we're going to, I will give some explanation about this after our break, but before our break, I want to make sure that if there's any announcements from Suze or anyone, and then we'll be taking a 10-minute break. 10-minute break. Suze?
Yeah, thank you so much, Philip. And I just love your emphasis on just allowing the mind and heart to be present. And for 2,600 years, the Buddhist teachings have been freely offered. And in exchange, we, the recipients of the teachings, have helped to support the teachers. In Asia, that support was often in the form of food, clothing, and shelter. And here in the West, our support is more in the form of financial contributions. When we support a specific teacher, we're also supporting the Dharma itself. On our path of practice, we deepen our gratitude for the Dhamma and those who share it with us. And out of this gratitude for what this practice means to us, we want to be sure that the teachings continue to be offered. At Seattle Insight, we're so fortunate for our guiding teachers and the wonderful visiting teachers like Philip who comes to Seattle. So I invite you to reflect on these teachings and what they mean to us and how our lives have been transformed by the gift of the Dhamma, the gift of the Buddha, the gift of the Sangha. And out of this understanding of what do these teachings mean to us, and we reflect on our gratitude, I invite you to offer a response of generosity. You can directly offer support to Philip for his teachings for tonight and this weekend, and of course, continue to support Seattle Insight. There's both a donate button on the webpage, and then you all of you who have come, if you registered this weekend, you have a link to Philip's webpage, and I think one of our wonderful tech volunteers, there it is. The Donna for Philip is right there in the chat. So thank you so much for your generosity, and enjoy your break.
We have been through the arriving sequence, which tomorrow we will repeat, because it takes time to really learning how to spontaneously stay in available. And in our lives, we certainly want to be available to the time we have here. First of all, the aliveness of it, the aliveness of mind, heart, both. That's the first motivation. But the second is only if we are available do we have choice. We cannot have choice if we are not here and now. And if we're here and now, but just sort of like a registering, like the barcode at the supermarket, that doesn't give us choice. It's being both having the experience of the moment and having that mindfulness, what I call the observer and, or witnessing, or the observer and experiencer, that those two together, being present in that way, creates that fullness of available, which gives us choice. And it gives us the ability to stand under the difficult, to stand under the dukkha. I take this phrase from the Venerable Samedho, to stand under in this way. So this is the way that this naturally arises in our practice, the way it worked out for me and now the people that I've worked with so long, is this is one of the practices that really helps do that. Took me forever to be willing to share this practice, because it felt like it was going to seem so simple, people would just dismiss it. Turns out they haven't done that, and I deeply appreciate it. But that was, I thought they'd think, oh, that's just some peculiar way he talks, you know, and not realize that I meant it literally. So that's one of the two preliminary practices for building the conditions in the natural arising. And you saw how it could possibly, and maybe did for you, affect your experience of the physical body. It's very different when we start this way into the felt sense of the physical body. We're much more empowered to get both the inside of the experience, because the felt sense, and also have this choice, not collapse and around or reject physical experience. Again, just as the Buddha learned to do. The other preliminary practice that we do for this, to establish the staying in, inward staying, which we'll talk more about tomorrow. But the other way that we get ourselves prepared is through taking the renunciations, the three renunciations, the renouncing of judging mind, the renouncing of comparing mind, and the renouncing of fixing mind. These three mind states are the primary cause of our views and opinions. And the primary commentary, this inner commentary that's going on, is primarily made up of those three things. Even if we're being fearful, we're comparing for fearful reasons. We're wanting to fix it that we can be safe. We not embarrass ourselves or not get in trouble or not be around that person that's so critical or whatever it is that we are doing this. So much of the inner chatter is these three. And it so gets in our way of just being. It so gets in the way of our own sense of aliveness, our own felt sense of the heart feeling of it, our own intuition. And so I can't tell you the number of times that I have taken these three renunciations. I've taken these three renunciations sitting in a meeting where something is very much getting on my nerves. I know something about the way the meeting is being led or the way people are participating, whatever it is, that I don't want to be reactive. You see, all three of those are reactive, this judging, comparing, and fixing. Judging means judging a good or bad. It could be of yourself, it could be of other people, of the environment, of the person's taste in clothes. It could be, but we're saying we judge good or bad. Comparing is when the mind is saying better than or worse than. Oh, their practice is so much better than mine. Oh, that other teacher, she was so much better at leading a meditation than Philip. That's a comparing mind. It can be anything. And we just do it all the time. And then fixing mind is when we see something that we don't like about us or another person, even when they're really telling us it's our friend and they're really telling us, oh, I'm really struggling. Do we stay and listen and let them feel our heart caring? No, we jump in to fix it. Well, you know, you could do this. And the other work I do, the life balance work, I over and over again train people to stop jumping in and fixing your friend. This has become a disease. It's in our society. We don't listen anymore. We fix. So it's quite big. The Buddha, talking about comparing mind, he said, do not see as better than or worse than or the same as. Stay out of the neighborhood. And that's staying out of the neighborhood of these three things. So people will say to me, but Philip, I have to do these things. Every human being has to do these things. Is this a good road to take or not a good road? Is this good for my health, not good for my health? And I always nod, yes, we do. We have to evaluate. We have to assess. And then we have to choose. So we're assessing, we're evaluating, we're choosing. But the mind state does not have to be a mind state of judging and comparing and fixing, which contract, there's a contraction into the self of that. And we tend to think that movement involves a contraction, because in the physical body, I don't want to go through that long explanation about how that's true physically, but in fact, we can have a movement towards or away that has a very different quality. And that different quality is when the mind is not judging, comparing, and fixing, you discover that there is a discerning mind state that's not doing those things. But it's still making decisions. It's still evaluating. It's still weighing choices. It's still assessing the genuineness of a person or of an opportunity. But it's a calmer mind. And then I'm asked, well, but then what motivates it? What's it, if it's not judging and comparing, what's the activity of a mind that's in discernment, a discerning mind? And my answer, after many, many years of watching this and practice, is that it is motivated by wisdom and compassion. The mind employs wisdom and compassion for its assessing, for its evaluating. It doesn't get in the story of it so much. It's more a larger picture. We're not so involved and from our soap opera point of view, our story, our selfing of it, just as the Buddha's pointing out. And so this discerning mind utilizes wisdom and compassion. We practice to develop wisdom and compassion. Why would we not want to be resting in wisdom and compassion when we make decisions, rather than our story, rather than our hindrances all coming into play? Well, in fact, there are reasons. One is that those hindrances coming in play create a lot of drama in our life. And we do like drama. We do like drama. And another reason is we also like selfing. We are reassuring ourselves on an existential level by all of that judging, comparing, and fixing that we're here. But so can wisdom do both of those. The wisdom can give us a kind of a Dharma sense of what we are. And the compassion, the heart moves. So the heart moves, but with wisdom. And when we employ this more and more, when we're living from this discerning mind, what happens is we have more wisdom and more compassion. It's like the chain of dependent liberation, where we move not, you know, the interchange of dependent origination, where you fall into more and more suffering because of this leads this 12 steps of going into suffering, taking birth, and therefore suffering. It's that there's another sequence that goes the other way. You start with suffering and you end up with liberation. And this discerning mind is what's able to do that, and it's kind of for the fruit that happens. Now, we're not perfecting discernment, but we're directionally aligning towards discernment. Just as we directionally align to being available, we're not perfectly available, and we're certainly not perfectly aligned. But we are in that direction, and that's the direction of wisdom and compassion. That's the direction of having choice. And that comes because we have established ourselves beyond the reactive mind, the grasping mind, the mind that is wanting, the mind that is an aversion, and the mind that's in deluded. We are establishing a different place from which to meet life. Again, we'll have much more about this inward staying tomorrow. What I wanted to do tonight is to have that we take the refuges tonight. Not the refuges, but the renunciations tonight. We're going to do the refuges a little later. So that you get a feel for this, and that because this is a practice empowerment. And you can see for yourself if you like it or don't. But if you don't give yourself a real chance of employing it, you won't know. And if we stay with only what we know, How do we become more skillful? How do we discern what's wholesome and unwholesome? How do we learn? And so the invitation is to open to this and see for yourself. So we're going to do this as taking these vows of renunciation. And I will start with judging mind, and I will do a four part for judging mind, in which I will say one part and pause so that you repeat it back in your silent mode there. And then I'll say the next part, and you say out loud if you can, without disturbing people where you are. And then the third part and the fourth part. And then we'll go on to these others. So this is a turning. It's a turning. You're deliberately turning to establish something inside. You're deliberately doing this. And you can feel in the course of this retreat, you can get in contact with how wholesome it is, the motivation, and how skillful it is. It's palpable. It's not an idea like that. It's a palpable experience at the felt sense level. And you can see how it, like with it being available, you are protecting. You're protecting and inspiring. So here we go. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce judging mind as best I am able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce comparing mind as best I am able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce fixing mind as best I am able. Again, there is a practicalness to this because this is what we actually do. We have a very felt sense when we're judging and comparing and fixing. We're not having to like bring out our checklist and say, now, does it have these three characteristics or not? We instantly know when we're judging, comparing, and fixing, and we can easily feel it. And so we want to be giving ourselves the opportunity to see, is there an alternative? because that's what the Buddha's claim is. He says there is an alternative. Thich Nhat Hanh says a better way to live. And I have found that to be true. And each of us has to find that for ourselves, if that's true for us or not. Now, in your because you're having a home retreat, or at least a non-residential retreat, there's times and situations you're going to have to employ for yourself. Because if you're having interaction with people in your house, which inevitably happens for some folks, then you can, I invite you to see if you can stay in this non-judging, non-comparing, non-fixing. But if your 4-year-old is being really acting out, or your teenager is really acting out, you know, you're excused as you're being overwhelmed by the circumstance. But I'm really inviting you to watch yourself in those, any kind of interactions you have, because this is closer to practicing on the street of life. And my teaching is oriented to finding freedom on the street of life. I'm very oriented that way, because that's what I did all of these years. Once I got a feel for the Dhamma fairly early, but what just confounded me is, okay, how do you live this? How do you live this? And I went and asked my teachers, who always sort of turned it back to me. No one ever gave me any kind of advice. It was just, and so, That's been my journey. So with that as a background here, again, we'll explore this all in many areas. We've got lots more to go in our internal experience, and maybe new experience for many of you. Okay, so we're going to end our time together, and we're going to end our time together by taking the refuge together. And those of you who don't know it, you can just listen to my voice. And those of you who can, again, you're staying on mute, but we're going to be taking refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and just like we would on any residential retreat. And we, now that we've got all this space that we've created in the meditation and renouncing, judging, comparing, and fixing, we got maybe more space to open to the refuges. They're very short. I'm going to say them in Pali. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dhamma, I take refuge in the Dhamma, in the Sangha. For a second time, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. For a third time, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. And thus the bell rings once for Buddha, again for Dhamma, and again for Sangha. one way to understand the three vows. There's many other ways to also experience the three vows. But that can remind us at the end of a sit that, yeah, I'm not sitting alone. I'm sitting in the tradition. I'm in my own nature. That's impersonal to me. It's in my own capacity to feel and know and experience and choose. I'm very much emphasized choice, as you've already heard, and you'll hear it much more. We're undeveloped in our relationship with choice. We're really undeveloped. And that's one of those things that's really developable. It's one of the things we can actually make in a relatively short period of time, start to make real change to our benefit in relation to that. We just aren't accustomed to treating it as a practice, this establishing and penetrating the nature of choice. And then, of course, with Sangha, this again to really appreciate, and I appreciate it when you keep your screens on, even during the sit, but I don't keep your screen on if it makes you self-conscious. There's no suffering, but it feels more together when we're seeing faces, and certainly during the Dhamma talks and all this too, when we can see each other and I can see you. Good night, and I will see you tomorrow morning. And Suze, anymore, or Jerry, whomever's saying that last.
Yes, please. Yeah, I first of all, I can repeat your gratitude. Yeah, thank you. Thank you to all people who showed up. I mean, this grouping together is supporting my practice, supporting everybody's practice. Appreciate all the volunteers, Zoom tech people, certainly you, Philip, and Suze, and the registrars. There are so many people that came together to make this happen. And it's still time. You can register for the weekend, so feel free to do that, and the registrar will send out a link to you if you do that. And yeah, hopefully see you all tomorrow, and hopefully best wishes to you, and may the fruit of our practice be of that benefit to all beings.
Good night.